We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecks and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This podcast network. We're doing it again, and it was such a terrible idea, yet we're still going to do it again. We're going to look at 7 issues of this magazine in 7 days, because why the fuck not? And even more ridiculous is I'm joined by the same 2 idiots to do it again. Hello, Carl.
Ahoy. How you doing?
I'm questioning my life choices. How about you?
I feel that now we've committed to it, it's Smegazine all the way.
Yeah.
Final issue or bust.
Hello, Colin.
Hello. I'm quite enjoying it. I don't know why you're fucking, dissing it so much.
Because it's such a stupid idea to, do lots of podcasts when you've already got lots of podcasts in it.
That is true. Although I've recently been listening to Cliche and Son of Cliche, and there's fucking worse things that we could be doing podcasts on. Yeah. It's not good.
What's Cliche and Son of Cliche?
You should know that. It's the radio series that Rob Grant and Doug Naylor did first of all, which the Dave Holland Space Cadet was in Son of Cliche later on.
Which was that's why it rang a bell.
Yeah, but Cliche, which doesn't have Dave Holland Space Cadet, it does have one. It's got the whole rock joke in there as a sketch. But other than that, it's fucking terrible. It might be the worst thing I have ever heard.
So maybe not do a special on that.
Possibly not, no.
Don't listen to him, Mark. More specials.
I do like specials. That is kind of my thing.
I've said that before, but yeah, I like the specials. They're great.
To be fair, they get about half the listens of the main show. But that, it's still quite a lot of listens.
I've seen the specials live quite a few times, and there's always been a really good crowd. They're very popular.
Lol. Did you know that Colin presents a music podcast?
Two of them.
All right. So, yeah, we're doing the fucking Smegazines again. And in general, they really are quite hit and miss, aren't they? There's some really great stuff. And then there's some absolute fucking waste of print.
But that just makes it more fun.
Does it?
I reckon so. It'd be boring if it was all amazing. It'd be better, but it'd be boring. Yeah.
you don't appreciate the really good stuff until you've seen the absolute dross.
Yeah. And there's a fair bit of it in this issue.
Yeah. Yes, there is. Shall we talk about Smegazine issue 8?
I think we should.
Smegazine issue 8 came out in, it says October 1992, so it came out in
September
1992, because I did a learn and a remember from the last time we did these magazines.
Well done.
Thanks, Colin. The front cover has Lister with a bazookoid, and I was like, the fuck? Where's the pretty art?
Hmm.
It's a screenshot. Do not like.
I think it's a promo photo, actually. I think I quite liked it. I thought it was quite a nice, composed photograph.
Yeah, and there's lots. They do the photo cover a lot later on, but there's still some coming up with cool illustrations. One in particular.
Fond of the photo covers.
Just turn the page and see what's inside.
I mean, yeah, it makes sense. It's cheaper, isn't it?
It's got Mr. Flibble on it.
Yeah, and I think as well in these issues that are coming up, we're going to see an upping in the comic strip quota. So maybe those artists are more busy doing those when it's like, well, yeah, don't worry about the cover. We'll just do a photograph one.
I mean, you said that it mentions Mr. Flibble on the front cover. It does indeed say Mr. Flibble is angry. It doesn't actually say what the fuck the article is. It doesn't say just Mr. Flibble.
It says, Mr. Flibble is angry, which is true.
And surely that's all you need to know.
But it does feel like a proper cover because it actually tells you that there's an interview, there's news, there's Ace of the Rovers comic strip, and an Androids comic strip begins. So it's like a proper front cover of a proper professional magazine, yep. which we didn't see the any point up until this issue 8.
Yeah, I think from when we get onto the inside page and we just see how the staff has now got a column listing how many people are working for it now, as opposed to the three people it was, I think, in issue 1.
Yeah, the contents page does actually look professional, and it's a full list of contents with some cheeky little smatterings of humour. And you're right, that they have got more than three blokes.
Yeah. And it even says at the bottom that they've just moved. So it must be doing quite well because they've been able to move office.
Yes.
So do you think we're into the season 4, season 5, season 6 kind of area, if we're making a comparison, a metaphor, a thing?
Of the budget being bigger, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely hitting the stride.
Yeah.
Right, that means that the next time we record a bunch of these in like 2022, it's going to be Tat.
Potentially, I don't know.
Did you not read Volume 2?
I no. We'll get to that in a few days' time. The last issue that I read at the time.
Hmm.
But yeah, we'll get to that in not sure how many days, but we'll get there this week.
Many days.
Loads for us, but for the listeners, in a couple of days.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, Colin, don't break the fourth wall. We recorded all of these in one go, right?
Yes, yes, we have. Yeah. Against my will.
Imagine if we actually fucking did that. I think I'd go to bed like, my brain broke.
So anyway, Quigg shows up.
He does. We get the Future Echoes, the final part of the comic strip, as the first thing that we see. And it is, again, pretty much the script with a comic drawn around it, like we have seen with all of the adaptations so far.
The other ones so far, sometimes there's been little bits in the artwork that's made me go, oh, that's a really cool thing that they've done with that, that's different to how they've done it on TV. But my notes for the Future Echoes Part 5 strip is nothing remarkable. Yeah. So let's carry on.
It's functional.
Yeah.
I think in this as well, it kind of loses some of the delivery that you get from the telly. From the very first bit where it sort of says, oh, I get blown up then. Bits of you do. That in print just doesn't work, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. The main thing I do like about the strip is it's added in some other locations, so it's not just the bunks.
Yeah. And I thought the Polaroid was probably the best panel of the lot.
Yes, yeah.
And let's be fair, they get a reasonably good approximation of the actors in the artwork as well. I thought that was well done.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's been consistent all the way through because it's the same artist that's been doing all of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Apart from Norman Lovett's hair.
Yes.
Yeah. Why has he got a weird ass bowl cut side parting type sitch?
Yeah. It's like wet down.
But yeah, you're right. It just feels slightly functional and lazy and always has done.
There's not a lot more you could say about that.
No, that's about it for the. And thankfully, they're not just going through and doing the rest later on. So we haven't got to bother with these word for word adaptations that we don't. I keep saying this, but at the time, they weren't out on video yet. So it was more valid at the time.
Yeah. Next up is an advert for 2000 AD and Judge Dredd yearbooks. Later on in the magazine, there's another advert for normal 2000 AD and normal Judge Dredd magazine. So, magazine. Like Smegazine, but without the S.
Which I thought was interesting, that this issue, there was only 3 adverts, and they were all 2000 AD.
Yeah, there's like literally no paid adverts outside of the company that prints the mag.
Exactly. So they're obviously, at that point, must have been doing quite well, or at least thought they were doing well enough to not need it.
Yeah. You'd think they'd do it anyway if they could make some money from it.
Or potentially couldn't sell the advertising space that month.
Oh, Good point. Well made.
Ringing up 2008. Look, we said you could have two, but we've got another one. Do you want the three? We won't charge you any extra for it.
I mean, I guess that does feel like it's one extreme or the other, and I don't think there's really a way for us to find out.
No, because the people that did it at the time probably don't remember or care.
No.
Because it's nearly 30 years ago.
Isn't it? Next up is the report from Dimension Jump 92, which was the Red Dwarf Convention.
The first Red Dwarf Convention.
Indeed. And over 100 people attended, apparently. I think that was probably supposed to be an impressive figure. but I'm not impressed. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, but that at that point, conventions weren't as much of a thing. They weren't like the big memorabilia show and stuff like that at the NEC. Yeah. At that point, they were little things in a random hotel on the off season. And you've got throughout this report, you've got most of the people that they spoke to had never been to a convention before, including Rob Grant and Doug Naylor. They'd never done one. And, you know, they're all saying things like, oh, I thought everybody would be sitting here with Spock ears and stuff like that. Because it was seen as a Trekkies thing and only a Trekkies thing at that point.
Yeah. And by the sounds of it, this was organised by fans as well, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it still is. The official Red Dwarf fan club still runs Dimension Jump.
Yes.
When we can.
Yeah, because it was online last year.
Yeah, that's right. I went.
I know.
Mm-hmm. It was
good. Did we do a special?
We did.
We did do a special.
Yeah, I like specials.
So this report's by Jane Killick, who I didn't notice when we were doing it last time if she was doing much writing, but she's, I don't know if she's just started at this point in the magazine, but she does a lot of the features from now onwards. And she's still a journalist these days. She's on Twitter and that kind of thing.
Brilliant. So,
if she listens, hello.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, this... She paints quite an entertaining picture of how shambolic the convention was.
Yeah, it didn't sound very slick.
It really wasn't. It was absolutely all over the place. And, you know, they've got panels that just fell apart because nobody had planned what they were going to say. They've got, on the Saturday morning, which I had a massive nostalgia burst on this bit, Saturday morning they discovered that I think they cancelled one of the planned things because Chris Barry and Craig Charles were on Parallel 9.
Yes.
Which,
wow.
I used to love Parallel 9. It's one of the sort of lost, forgotten Saturday morning BBC Kids TV shows, because everyone remembers like Going Live and Live and Kicking and stuff like that, but this was sort of between those.
Mm.
And it was set in space. And it was, Makata was at like, a time thief was the main dude on it with his massive eyebrows.
I was going to say, is it the original Parallel 9 with its fairly high concept for Saturday morning TV?
This one was, yes.
Yeah, or was it the one afterwards?
This was before Brian the Dinosaur appeared, who I was a particularly big fan of because he liked Guns N' Roses and I like Guns N' Roses. So, yeah.
I do remember that the original Parallel 9... And if you can remember far back enough, Ghost Train, which was on ITV.
Yes. Yeah.
I loved Ghost Train.
Yeah. Ended on a cliffhanger.
Yes, I do. I vaguely remember, or it might be that I've read it years later.
Yeah. Like Ghost Train, they all get zapped onto a planet and they just get left there and that's the last ever episode. And then I think on Parallel 9, because there's always like an Earth host, isn't there, that sends them guests. They try and escape, and they manage to escape, but she gets stuck on Parallel 9, and that's how that series ends. And then they reboot it, so they never really answer what's going on. Yeah,
beautiful. And similar to my experience when I went to the Hollyhop online convention, Hattie Hayridge was really lovely at Dimension Jump 92. She was ace at Hollyhop too.
She really is. And there's like a thread going through the whole of that article where all the fans are asking for it, and Hattie's saying that they want Holly to have more to do in the next series and they want more stuff based on Red Dwarf. and completely the opposite happens. Yeah. Which is a massive shame. Because, I mean, season six is great, but I'd love it even more if Hattie Hayridge as Holly was still there.
Yeah, then that's the thing. I don't think she would have known that she was done at that point.
From the way she's talking in this, she did not know at that point.
No.
Because, well, I mean, she might have been a bit annoyed and not turned up at that point if that was the case, but...
I like as well that they have an auction of props and things, and Hattie Hayridge bought a videotape of a plasticine animation some fans did, and she paid £50.
Yeah,
that's just nice.
She's just brilliant. She's
yeah,
absolutely lovely, and we need more of her.
Agree.
I did laugh that the most awkward looking people in the photographs of everyone at this convention is Rob Grant and Doug Naylor.
I mean, they were hardly the coolest guys in the world, and that you can tell.
Look at Rob Grant, though. He's got the aviators on. This is a man that thinks he's cool.
Hold on. I'll wear aviators.
not with an all-black suit, though, do you?
No, not usually.
But you might now.
I have worn aviators and a suit, but that was because it was... a wedding where I was a groomsman.
There's the quotes in this article as well. There's one which is the local newspaper reporter.
Oh my God, yes.
Craig Charles, is he the one out of the Fine Young Cannibals? And as soon as I read that, I was like, a bit racist.
That is a little bit racist, yes. Isn't it? I mean, he's a similar skin tone to Roland Giff, I suppose. It is a bit racist, though. It is a bit racist.
Yeah.
I like how they went to great lengths to say he was a local reporter and not the BBC Radio Northampton reporter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the BBC is never racist.
No.
Of course not. No.
No.
Did you believe the thing about Danny John Jules' reason for not turning up?
Yeah. I
can believe that.
So his reason given was basically that he was filming Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, and the actor that plays Robin had got ill, so they'd had to extend the filming for a few days, which seems plausible to me.
It was just the way they said, they had to extend his contract by 3 days as well. It's just like, okay. that seems a bit, that it's the specific amount of time he's supposed to be. This
yeah, could be, but no, I'll choose to believe him.
From what I've seen of Danny John Jules on Twitter, and indeed the interview in a previous issue of this magazine, the man gives no shits. If he didn't want to turn up, he'd have just said, can't be arsed.
Yeah. He'd be like, nope, not going to do that, fuck off.
Next up is Reflections of a Cat, which is the cat's diary, which is kind of like narrated by Holly, a la what we've seen previously with Rimmer's diary. And whilst it does sound like the cat, I didn't find it funny.
No. The only sort of thing I found, it just seemed to be repeating a lot of old jokes. But but whether it was old jokes because we know them as much as we do, but the only thing about it was I thought it expanded on his utter contempt for Rimmer, which I don't think you see as much in the TV show.
Yeah.
Mm.
The main thing I thought was towards the end, he says that it's snooze time, and that's generally what I thought about that article.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when he said, can I go now? I felt the same.
Yeah.
The only thing I thought was kind of funny was he had to eject all the meat supplies from the hold.
I think I was particularly disappointed by this because the cat's my favourite character, and I was like, well, there's an article on the cat. Shit.
Yeah. Plenty of other articles on the cat later on and earlier that are good, though.
True. So next up are the survey results. And, of course, there is the list of Red Dwarf 5 and also the list of Red Dwarf of all time, which they say that they will do next month. So it is just the list of all of Red Dwarf 5. They seem to be eking it out a little bit, I thought.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is one particular bit that I do really, really like in this survey results bit, though, because as we know, the title of Demons and Angels was originally High and Low. And there's somebody wrote in on their notes, asked us where we got the name Demons and Angels from. Same place as the others, Anthony. Those big letters at the beginning of the episode. I like it when they do complete sarcasm like that. They're really, really good at that in this magazine.
Yeah, it's very Red Dwarf humour to be that sarcastic, though, because the show is quite sarcastic.
Mm.
But the results were that the fans of Red Dwarf think that Back to Reality is the best, followed by Quarantine, then Demons and Angels, The Inquisitor, Terraform, and Hollow Ship, which, if my memory serves right, I think Colin and I agreed with Back to Reality as the number one.
Yeah, definitely don't agree with Hollow Ship being the worst, though. I really like that episode.
Yeah.
I didn't think much of Hollow Ship, I never have, but okay. It's better than Terraform.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'm surprised how well Quarantine did, to be fair.
It's got Mr. Fucking Flibble in it.
I know. But I didn't think it was the second best one of the whole series.
Red Dwarf 5 is so fucking great that it's really difficult to put them in order. Yeah. And, you know, we have had people disagree with us on Twitter. We had someone the other day disagree that Body Swap, and they said it was a great episode. I was like, really? Did you watch that episode?
That person is wrong. I didn't see that. I would have pointed it out at the time if I had done.
I still like Body Swap. I enjoy Body Swap.
Wish you'd have done the fucking episode so I didn't have to watch it.
Now, I think that's interesting because you didn't agree. Colin and I had quite similar top fives, whereas yours was quite different to us. And that's fascinating that it is that kind of good. Really, yeah. That people can have really different opinions, and I think that's great. And I didn't think much of Hollow Ship or Terraform comparatively to the other four episodes, but I would watch those episodes 100 times over some of the tat that they put on the telly now, you know?
Yeah.
Next up is Lister's cookery page, and it is a gazpacho soup recipe, which I laughed out loud immediately, and then I read it and I was like, that's actually a functional gazpacho soup recipe.
Yeah, because you can cook it. Well, cook it. You can prepare it, can't you?
I make a gazpacho soup, and that's a gazpacho soup recipe. The previous Lister's cookery pages have been like jokes, shit, but you could actually cook.
Peach surprise is not a joke. Peach surprise is a fucking serious meal.
But yeah, if you actually want to learn how to make gazpacho soup, there is actually a functional gazpacho soup recipe in this issue of the magazine.
I did like the Lister's comment, what, no chili? And Crichton's response, well, it is supposed to be eaten cold, sir.
It did take me a moment that it was different characters talking. I don't know whether it was just the scan that we were looking at, but especially the bits where Rimmer comes in and he's in italic.
That's they've done that in a lot of them though, and I think they have consistent fonts throughout.
Yeah, I do like the layout of this page though, where it looks like a photograph. I mean, it is a photograph of a piece of paper with sort of bits on, and then it's been typed on, because that to me looks like something that would have been in the like the Red Dwarf companion guide,
yeah,
or like the tie-in book that always would come out that I always used to get. Like, I remember having this, and I had like Mr. Bean's diary.
I got that from a school book fair. Yeah.
Did you see the follow-up to that? Dorian's diary from fucking Birds of a Feather. That exists as a thing.
No, I didn't. That didn't appeal to me as much because...
No, it was shite.
Yeah.
Let's not do a Birds of a Feather podcast.
Oh, go good. On. More podcasts, well, Mark.
Well, Tony might cover it in You Have Been Watching.
That's true. Yeah, that's actually... could be covered on the network after we've made jokes.
Hopefully you'll go for better sitcoms than Birds of a Fucking Feather, though.
Principal Man.
But the best sitcom deserves its own podcast, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we're launching the British Empire podcast.
No! That one's for Matt, so I'm not doing it. It's not good. Right, next up is... the first of two Androids short newspaper-style strips. And this first one was basically a direct script quote, not dissimilar to what we've seen with Future Echoes and all the other ones before. But there was a reference to Bouncer. And obviously, Bouncer is the dog from Neighbours from the time. Mm. And I loved Bouncer. I wanted a Bouncer.
Yes, but in this, he's a robot space hopper.
Yes, he is.
I love the fact that, the first sort of four or five boxes are exactly what we see in the episode of Crichton. But then it just immediately just dashes all of that by having a meanwhile and then going to something completely different.
Yeah.
And there's two bits that I really, really like in this little strip. The ending, which I'm sorry for spoilers, but it doesn't go well for Bouncer. Because
no, it doesn't.
Bouncer, look out for that temporal displacement vortex. And then underneath at the end, it's got next Elder Android.
Oh, yes.
So the thing about Bouncer and Neighbours and my childhood, it's really fucking odd what you remember and what you don't. Funnily enough, I have looked at this in detail in my podcast, Writing the Childhood, which is about children's television. But Neighbours, right? There is one piece of music from Neighbours that has stuck in my head for 30 plus years. And that is the music when Bouncer did something funny. And it went, do, 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 do. Bom, 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 bom. Bum 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 bum.
Was that in the infamous Bouncer's Dream episode?
Yes, that was indeed in the Bouncer's Dream episode. And why has that stuck in my head? I can't tell you lots of other things from my childhood. But Bouncer's theme from Neighbours is there and will clearly always be there.
It's how our brains work or don't.
Well, quite. Later on, there's the second one, which actually continues the two stories. So the cliffhanger we got in the show is kind of slightly resolved. Yeah. And it's odd and it's satire. And I didn't find it funny.
I really enjoyed the art style on it.
Yes,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. But I think it's going to pick up because I remember reading the Android strips and I do think it's going to get better.
We've got Elder Android on the last one, and this one ends with next East Androids.
Yeah,
which I want to see how far they go with that.
As puns go, East Androids, that's very, very good. As a concept, I think it's great. I really do like that they've decided to do this Androids comic strip. I think it's a fun thing that they're doing. I just didn't think that these were great so far, but we'll see how it goes with those, I think.
Yeah.
Next up is a new segment called News from the Dwarf, which, if I'd been reading this at the time, I'd have been fucking well pleased, because News from the Dwarf means that there's a page worth of current events around Red Dwarf, and that means that Red Dwarf is really popular.
Yeah.
I was really chuffed seeing that. Even now, like all this time later, just seeing how much stuff was going on at the time and how busy everybody... There was a couple of things. One is that Red Dwarf 6, they're expecting it to be filmed in January, February, and then air in March.
Yeah, that's a quick turnaround.
I mean, we don't have that kind of turnaround with this fucking podcast. But there was loads of stuff. They reported that Red Dwarf USA was dead. They were talking about the talking books, a props auction, a video release, Hattie Hayridge's stand-up. There's loads of shit going on.
I'd be interested to see what happened to the props that got auctioned and who's got them.
Yeah. Probably Hattie Hayridge if she got like 50 quid in her purse from doing a gig the night before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Just Hattie Hayridge's house is just full of props.
And stuff made by fans that she thought was cool.
And there's also a t-shirt and video competition as well. And, you know.
2X4B.
Yes. But I think this is an absolute... complete and utter theft of an idea that Doctor Who magazine has always done. But Doctor Who is considered to be a bigger show than Red Dwarf, and the fact that they could do it and could nick this concept from that magazine is great.
I don't know if you could call having a news page about the thing that the magazine's about a theft, because Guitarist magazine has news about guitars in it. You know, Auto Trader's probably got news about cars in it.
Yeah, but like, all right.
It's not theft.
I do like the fact that one of the last items in this article is, this magazine comes out in time just to let you know you've missed the repeat of Robert Llewellyn performing.
Brilliant.
And then just to top it off, you've missed the repeat of his previous stage show on Channel 4, and also you've missed the performance at the Bloomsbury Theatre of his current stage show. I love that.
It's just shitty, isn't it, that they did that?
He even put at the end, oh, it's a hard life.
I think that's great. Next up is The Amusing Adventures of Mr. Flibble comic strip, and holy fucking shit, this was not for children.
No, it was not.
We've found where we've crossed over the line from previous issues. Like, is it for kids? Is it not for kids? No, it's not.
What the actual fuck? I am traumatized and I'm 42.
There's some bits in it that are absolutely fucking great.
It's brilliant, but it shouldn't have been there.
I've always remembered the, oh shit, there goes me no claims bonus bit. That panel is where I learnt what a no claims bonus was, because I went and asked me dad.
Amazing. Amazing. But there is clear sex references.
It's a little bit worse than that.
Yeah.
You know, rape at gunpoint in one fucking scene, which is a little bit worrying.
I was trying to kind of be a little bit more subtle than that, yeah, Colin, if I'm being brutally honest with you. I
thought it needed mentioning, because it's the rest of it, if it didn't have that scene, I'd be totally fine with it. But it's a definite 90s ick.
Yeah. It was very 2000 AD in its savagery and its satire, yeah, and its art style.
Boobs.
Yeah, I just absolutely... What the actual fuck? What the fuck?
But other than that two panels that's got that bit in it, I absolutely loved it.
I didn't say I didn't like it.
And I'd always remembered the bit about Mr. Flibble finds the king and gives him his present. Can you guess what it is? That's right, thermonuclear Megadeth.
Mr. Flibble is an absolute psychopath. And
I didn't remember this one, but I do remember future Mr. Flibble strips, and just that he's...
They do another one?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit.
I don't think it's as extreme. There probably were letters after this, I can imagine.
Yeah, that they didn't publish on the letters page.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, remember, I mean, what was the date this came out? September 92. I was 10.
You should not have been reading that at 10. Absolutely, definitely should not have been reading that at 10.
Yep, these things were discovered a few months later.
Really?
We'll get to that in a few days.
Right, okay. Next up is the Peter Ragg interview. And Peter Ragg was the visual effects guy on Red Dwarf.
What a fucking legend.
Yeah. Fully agree.
Not only did Peter Ragg work on Red Dwarf, which is legendary enough, but indeed, he also, as I learnt from this interview, started out on Thunderbirds, doing the fucking models on Thunderbirds and flying Thunderbird 2 and stuff like that.
Joe 90 as well. It wasn't just Thunderbirds. He was all over that shit.
He started on Thunderbirds, went on to Joe 90 and Captain Scarlet, but he's also worked on Doctor Who, although it was mostly sort of monster work on that rather than the models. And the man is just an absolute legend. Sadly, no longer with us. He died in 2012, I think. But this is my favourite of the Red Dwarf interviews that we've had so far.
Oh, it was an absolutely outstanding interview. It had everything. It was fascinating, but it wasn't patronising. And it was, he even talked about what visual effects are and how to get into it. It was well explained, but not dumbed down. It was just so perfect and really interesting about... You talked about Holoship, and when we covered Holoship, we kind of wanked over his beautiful, beautiful Holoship. And it's just...
I bet he wouldn't be happy with that.
No. You know what I mean?
Got to clean all the fucking perspex now.
He talked about the scutters. He talked about filming all the models and the different scales. I had no idea there were different scale things.
Yes,
And it was just great. It was just fucking great. I agree, best interview so far.
What I would say is if you're listening to this and not clicking onto the Internet Archive, to archive.org, to read them all, just go to this one and read Peter Ragged interview, because the dude is seriously worth reading what he's got to say. Another bit that I found really interesting that I think we mentioned in a previous episode when we covered, I think we mentioned in a previous episode when we were talking about the actual series 5 episodes, at this point they had no Red Dwarf model at all left, because they'd blown it up. And he talks about the process of actually blowing it up. So they filmed it on a super high speed camera and then just slowed it all down. So it was like a 2 second explosion slowed down to like a 20 seconds of film. It's just brilliant. Absolutely loved it. And
it's the kind of shit that you just simply cannot learn.
No,
it's just great. It's just great. It might be my favorite thing that the magazine's done ever.
There's a fair point for that. Definitely.
And you can tell the people who are interviewing him have not even that they've researched what they're talking about. They know what they want to ask him.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, this was the thing for me. It was like, what's the difference? Is you prefer working with shooting things on film as opposed to tape? I'd have thought he'd have gone for tape because, you know, the slight the things in it could cover up anything that makes it look unreal. But he was like, no, you've definitely got to do it on film. You've definitely got to do it on film.
Yeah, for model work, he says it has to be film. Mm. I don't know much about differences between film and tape. Do you know why that would be, Carl, being a sort of more filmy person than me?
More than likely because if you're... It depends how they're doing it, really. If you're sort of hand-doing it, then you can make everything go faster.
Oh, right. So they like sort of on film, they'd hand crank it sometimes.
If they're hand cranking it, it all depends, really. And you can't do that with tape. You'd have to do it afterwards, and it always looks crap.
Okay.
But if they were doing it on film and they were hand cranking it or running the camera at a different speed, which you probably might not have been able to do on tape back then. Then, it'll give it more of a thing.
It gives it a greater sense of scale, doesn't it? It makes it bigger. Cool.
Yeah. But I think we all liked that. Next up is an article called Know the Game, Zero G Football. And it's basically a satire of cynical American culture. And the art is fucking ace.
That's it. The art on these pages is absolutely fantastic. Again, it's quite sort of 2000 AD.
Yes, again.
The article itself is sport. Doesn't matter if it's a fictional sport. Fucking hate anything to do with sport.
There's some nice sideswipes of American culture that I always appreciate, a sideswipe of American culture.
Yeah, but it's like even in, despite the creator being a horrible fucking turf harridan, I really like the Harry Potter books and films, but I've always wanted to skip over the fucking Quidditch bits.
I
agree. The art's great. I didn't particularly get into it much. The only thing I really enjoyed about it was, obviously, we've all heard of the London Jets, but they finally mentioned another team.
Yes.
Yes.
The Birmingham Mini Coopers.
My local Zero G football team.
Brilliant. Next up is Ace of the Rovers, which is a comic strip. And, I mean, Smegchester Rovers popped me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a satire of Roy of the Rovers featuring Ace Rimmer.
Which means it's two sports articles in a row. So I switched off.
Apart from this has been my favourite thing in it, if it wasn't for the Peter Ragg interview, I really enjoyed this. It's a parody, but it nails the style of what it's parodying pretty much spot on, I thought.
Yeah, I never read the original, so sort of passed me by, but I can tell from the art style that it's very... very much like it should be.
So it's another dimension jump for Ace, but it feels to me like it's almost morphed into Quantum Leap, and he's a little bit like fucking Sam Beckett.
Yeah,
yeah, I suppose so. It's Because in the strip, he basically the Rimmer he meets is a top footballer who's lost his spark, basically, and Rimmer Ace Rimmer replaces him. But he doesn't look like the other Rimmer.
No.
He doesn't really make any effort to look like the other Rimmer. He keeps his shades on and the hair, but they even mention it in the episodes, like, oh, I like the new hair. Shades look cool. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I loved it. Next up is the next issue thing, and it tells you we've got the story of Red Dwarf USA, a Dwayne Dibley comic, more androids, and a Norman Lover interview. And I tell you what, that sounds like a great issue.
Mm.
Should we cover it tomorrow?
I think we should.
Oh, go on then.
But we're not done with this one yet. There's still a few more pages, because that's really early in the magazine for some reason.
Yeah, they do seem to place their next issue in random places for no good reason.
But wherever they've got a spare half a page, innit?
Yeah, probably. Next up is the cat profile, and it is kind of like a picture of the cat with name, species, occupation, skills, hobbies, etc., etc. Classic profile that you would see in various things. And, you know, references the show, but meh.
Yeah. It's filler.
That's it. It's nothing we don't know. Nothing anybody that buying the magazine doesn't already know.
No. And it does feel like this is the next, we need something that we make sure we have for the next five issues, that we have a consistent thing, yada, yada. And I assume we'll get Lister and Rimmer and etc. And they will all be equally dull, like the fucking, what were they called?
Oh, like the episode guides.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like the fucking episode guides.
Yeah, to me this felt a bit like, obviously we've had the next issue thing on the previous page, that the editors went, what do you mean you put it there? We've got like three pages to go. What do we do? Character profile.
I've got on the character profile bit, full disclosure, we were planning on recording about sort of 3 weeks ago initially, and various different things have meant that we've had to reschedule a couple of times. So I did my notes for this issue absolutely ages ago. And now, like Rimmer in his exam, cannot fucking make head nor tail of some of my notes. I feel, you know, current under tension is expandable.
I am a fish, I am a fish, I am a fish.
I have written in the cat profile bit, my only note is 7 or 8 gills. I don't know why I have written that. I've just been sitting through it trying to work out what I meant by that. It might be that I've written something else and my handwriting's terrible. 7 or 8 gills.
Good. Good. Next up is the holograms, the letters page. And I was amused by the guy who cheated in the competition by using a fax. I thought that was quite funny.
Oh, that's not cheating. That's just ingenuity.
Just so 90s, using a fax to cheat.
I've been watching Taskmaster quite a lot recently, and I quite like it when people just read the like what they've got to do and just go, well, it doesn't say I can't do that. And this is exactly what this guy has done. It said the first person that sends us the lyrics to the Red Dwarf theme song wins a cap, and they got it to him first.
Yeah. So I didn't actually mention this in the survey results, but every time you get something written in by a reader, it's pervy as fuck.
There is a lot of that.
Nasty,
yeah.
Pervy 90s ick from the fucking people who watched Red Dwarf and wrote into this mag. I think that's it. I'm not going to say any more about that. Should we talk about something a little bit more kind of wholesome? There's a fucking pen pal request. Love that.
There is, yeah, because it's a lady who's moved to New York, and Red Dwarf isn't on over there, so
love
she can't
that.
Find anyone to talk to about it. So, yeah, hopefully somebody did write to Yvonne Campbell in Larchmont, New York. I'm sure people did, because there wasn't the internet back then, so I think pen pals were probably...
Did you write to Yvonne?
I didn't, no.
Did you not?
No.
Dickhead.
I was only
me.
10.
You could have still written to Yvonne.
Yeah, but I was spending all of my like money that I would have spent on stamps on Red Dwarf's magazine and the Beano at that point. Yeah. I wasn't even on Kerrang yet. The letter that really stood out to me on here, unfortunately, this isn't a positive one. There was somebody in issue 4 wrote in to say about her, somebody's like Baby is a massive Red Dwarf fan because they always like smile whenever they see the cat or something like that, I think it was, if I remember correctly. And you've got some absolute fucking bellends, in fact, three of them, Caddy Lynn and Bryony Catlow in Ambleside, you pricks, writing in to basically be all fucking gatekeepery and go on about how, oh, to be a Red Dwarf fan, you must be able to understand all the jokes, such as know who Norman Bates is, because that's fucking obscure information, isn't it? Twats. Fucking...
Right.
Yeah.
No fucking gatekeeping.
Exactly.
And if we are ever gatekeepy, tell us on Twitter and we will apologise, because that is not what we are like on this podcast or indeed across the entire network. If there's one thing that really gets on my tits, it's gatekeepy, snobby, nerdy cunts.
Exactly. If you have watched one clip of Red Dwarf and decide that you like it and you're going to go, I'm into this, that's fucking great. You do that.
Yep. Welcome.
All these fucking... bellends where they fucking go up to somebody in a t-shirt with a fucking band on it and get them to name three songs. They're cunts. Don't be one of them cunts.
Yep.
Gatekeepers are fucking twats.
And if anyone's got anything bad to say about me on Twitter, remember my name is Matt Latham.
Matt, that was really naughty.
Beautiful.
You can find me on Twitter somewhere.
At Pickadisc.
That's the one.
There's also somebody writes in about that they're asking about if Rimmer was born on the planet Io, why in Terraform did he have to be taken to the British Embassy? And the answer is Rimmer was brought up on a British colony on Io, which worries me a little bit.
Hmm.
Let's not do fucking colonisation again. It was shit. It led to Brexit. We don't want to continue with that shit.
No Brexit talk. Well, I tell you what, though. What kind of awful Red Dwarf fan would talk for hours and whine about continuity? Who would do that?
Again, my name's Matt Latham.
At Piccadisc. And then we finish with a pin-up and what the fuck? It's a Mutton Vindaloo beast.
But he wants a hug.
It's a lovely poster. I like it very much.
I don't get it. Why did they do that? They could have had anything. Anyway.
It's interesting just to see sort of, when you're looking close, of how detailed it actually is.
I think that's in there because they've got the Peter Ragg interview.
Yeah.
So they're showing off some of his work on a nice big A4.
All right, Little Miss makes fucking sense.
Exactly.
Right, so I suppose we should do the favourite and least favourite, but it's pretty fucking obvious what our favourite is this time, isn't it?
I think all three of us, Peter Ragg interview, would
it? Peter Ragg interview, definitely.
Yeah. yeah.
Brilliant.
What about the least favourite, Colin?
I think it's probably the reflection of a cat, because it could have been great, but wasn't.
Carl?
I agree. I'm not going to pick something that's like an easy target like the cat profile, but the reflections of the cat or the zero G football. I'll go with the zero G football just to be slightly different. It could have been better, but it was just a bit. And the only thing good about it is one joke about Birmingham and the artwork.
Because the artwork was so great, I wouldn't go for that. I think I am going to go for the obvious cat profile. And I think what's fascinating about this particular issue is it really is absolute polar opposites of dross and fucking insanely good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we've had a lovely chat today. And this has been... I definitely think this feels like, just by pure chance, because we wanted to do it for a week... It's almost like a new start, it almost feels like, with this issue, don't you think?
A little bit, yeah. Hmm. I can't remember enough about the last one, because we did it ages ago.
You've slept since then?
I've slept quite a few times since then. I don't feel like it's been enough, but, you know.
Before we go, Colin, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MogwaiFearsSatan. You can find my two other podcasts, Free With This Month's Issue and We Dig Music, by searching for them. I would do that if I were you. They're quite good. If you like musicy stuff.
Carl, where can people find you?
You can find everything that I'm up to on allmylinks.com / Mr. Carl, and it's the unabbreviated MISTER, and I'm begging for everyone else to get one of these things because I know what's coming.
I really should.
I know that you're about to do all yours.
Yeah, okay, so I am literally just going to name the podcasts I am regularly either hosting or guesting on. Kids TV, Right in the Childhood. Stuff about birth, marriage and death, life's milestones. A deep dive into the Chucky franchise, Chucky Vision. Love that name. I'm such a dickhead. I literally started a podcast because of that pun.
It's worth it.
Yeah. I was doing so well and then I got distracted. What else do I do? Tattoos, ink stories, and probably other shit. Marvel MCU podcast, Podcast 616. It's fucking everywhere. I just like talking about things I like. So thank you very much for joining us for the first of 7 days in a row covering this magazine. So until tomorrow.
I want to be able to get one of these I've Got a Double Polaroid t-shirts that were a dimension jump.
Do you have a double Polaroid?
I probably could get one.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at wemadethispod.